You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM.
In 1966, the president of Ghana was overthrown in a military coup, a coup backed by the CIA. Then-President Kwame Nkrumah had been the leading figure in Ghana's anti-colonial struggle. Earlier this month, Barack Obama made his first official visit as U.S. president to Africa, and the destination he chose was Ghana. The purpose of this visit was to outline his administration's vision for Africa. To discuss that vision, I'm joined on the phone by Gerald Lamel. He is the executive director of Africa Action, which is the oldest U.S. human rights organization that focuses on social and political justice for the people of Africa. Good morning, Gerald, and welcome to Vancouver Cooperative Radio.
Good morning, Sean. It's an absolute pleasure to be here.
Nice to have you again. Now, before we get to Obama, what were the key features of Bush's policy priorities in Africa?
Well, the administration often trumpeted PEPFAR, which was the heavy investment in health care and in particular HIV, AIDS, antiretroviral drugs, which was a key program. It was we were a little troubled with how it came about, but in the end, it turned out to be a very, very helpful in some ways program. But the key components that the Bush administration did not talk about were the war on terror apparatus, which was set up throughout the continent, the unilateral approach to country agreements, which is always very detrimental to Africa, not dealing with the African Union or the United Nations. Detrimental because the U.S. is too strong vis-a-vis the African countries and can easily get their way in ways that don't protect the African people. But perhaps most importantly was the militarization of our foreign policy vis-a-vis Africa, and as symbolized in 2007 by the prominence of the African Military Command, which is known as AFRICOM. This is the entity that now is the most influential entity on U.S. foreign policy in Africa.
So AFRICOM is still in place?
Well, absolutely, absolutely. In fact, it's getting bigger. This is the disappointing thing, I should say. When the Obama campaign was running, they had declared their support for Africa. They've never wavered in their support for Africa, but they did say that they were going to review the way the war on terror was being conducted throughout the world, including Africa. And our hope was that there would be some very important questions that have never been answered about AFRICOM, some key questions that, like, for example, how is it that providing more guns, more weapons, and strengthening the military of dictators across the continent is going to somehow result in democracy, rule of law, and good governance. But the Obama administration hasn't even begun to ask those questions and certainly hasn't delivered any answers to anybody, but they have doubled the amount of money that we're putting into the African Military Command. And it's very clear that AFRICOM is still, the militarized policy towards Africa is still the driving force.
And what do Africans think of AFRICOM?
Well, there is an enormous amount of resentment towards it, and this is something that the United States, you know, because the Western press really doesn't cover Africa, and because the Western countries and Eastern China and Russia and others are very so used to having their way on the continent, there has really been no coverage of what the African people are saying. Africa Action, as an organization for 56 years, has worked closely with civil society across the continent. And I can tell you the response has been overwhelmingly negative towards AFRICOM. The governments themselves have all rejected AFRICOM except Liberia. And Liberia actually admitted that AFRICOM is extremely unpopular in Liberia, but they feel that it is the only way to access favorable treatment vis-a-vis aid and loans and grants from the U.S. government. So they've actually admitted that, look, there's a reason why we're supporting AFRICOM. It's to get some benefit from it.
Now, as we mentioned, Obama has visited Ghana. Why did he choose Ghana as the country to visit?
Well, there is no question that I'm sure the administration did want to highlight the very, very successful election of John Adam Mills as the new president of Ghana. And the fact that you had a very contentious election which went to a runoff, and the runoff was decided by 1%, less than 1% of the vote, and yet you had a very, very peaceful transition, and by most accounts the election was free and fair. And so the success of this was enormous for the continent, and Ghana in particular, because it shows that perhaps there's a maturation of the political process. The concerns, however, that we, the activist community, have are that Ghana has recently discovered oil. It's believed that there are some 600 million barrels off the coast of Ghana, that a number of American oil companies, it was an American oil company that found it, and a number of oil and oil service companies are making their way to Ghana. We've seen how disastrous the discovery of oil has been in other countries that don't have a mature process. And given the fragility of Ghana, this is a major concern. The other major concern is that because of its stability, Ghana would be a very attractive place for the headquarters for the African Military Command. As I've mentioned, the African governments roundly rejected AFRICOM and the establishment of a headquarters in their countries, except Liberia. Liberia is not a the infrastructure in Liberia is too poor for an AFRICOM headquarters. Yet in Ghana, there is a potential for it to be much better, and so therefore, Ghana would be an ideal spot. It's already the headquarters for USAID in Africa, and its relative stability. Our concern is that the way the military operates, which is efficiency and expediency over the longer term concerns like human rights, democracy, and rule of law, that eventually U.S. policy in Ghana will be driven by support or non-support for AFRICOM. And if that is the case, then the United States could interfere with one of the successful democratic evolutions on the continent. That's a major, major concern.
Now, a key element of Obama's speech in Ghana was his stress on what he called the importance of good governance. What do you make of how he presented that theme?
Well, I thought it was brilliant in part and severely lacking in another. The fact of the matter is, yes, the comments that he made were very appropriate. African leadership has a huge role to play in the relative weakness of Africa here some 60 years after independence. The corruption, the failure to accept new ideas, new thinking, the driving away of the so-called brain drain, this has all been in part response because of the dictatorial style or the me first style of leadership that has left very little in the pot for everybody else. We've not bothered to empower the collective, which is really the strength in Africa. However, it's disingenuous to suggest that the African leadership is the or the Africa is solely responsible. Africa has been a place of rape and pillage for over 450 years. Everybody is wants to get something out of Africa. Nobody is in Africa to help the African people. They're there to get the enormous resources that are above and below ground. In the Congo, for example, there are $27 trillion under the ground in terms of minerals, resources, and et cetera. Nobody's there, to, and we've seen it, how weak and destroyed the Congo is, but yet everybody is there. Huge companies, huge country operations, huge military operations, everybody's in there trying to get their piece. As we all know, it is far easier to get your way in a country if you're dealing with one dictator as opposed to a collective democracy that is voting in its interests. So if you only have to appease one dictator and a small clan around him, that's a lot easier for a foreign country, a foreign business, whatever have you, than having to deal with people voting in their interests. So the United States, the United Kingdom, certainly France, Russia, China, they have no interest. They've never had any interest in seeing democracy really flourish because they've benefited from dictatorships. The United States, for example, is very close friends with Meles Zenawi in Ethiopia, Teodoro Obiang in Equatorial Guinea, Idris Deby in Chad. These are guys who have horrendous human rights records. Museveni in Uganda, you know, have no interest in democracy, have never expressed interest. So as we're criticizing the African, Africa for not bringing this about, why are we the ones supporting the efforts to prevent democracy from emerging?
Now, in contrast to this militarized or colonial approach, what would be the key elements of a constructive policy for U.S.-Africa relations?
Well, the most important thing that we have to do is to move Africa, help Africa move to a position where it can self-sustain, where it could develop its own infrastructure, where it could handle its own health care system, where it can do things on its own. Our approach, and this has been criticized quite a bit in Africa, our approach humanitarian-wise has been to provide emergency aid relief, which is a temporary solution. And that seems to be, you know, like, for example, when we go into Somalia, we say, well, yeah, we're going to go in militarily with the Ethiopians, but we're going to bring a certain amount of aid. What we need is clean water. We need food production. We need jobs. We need good schools. Need health care. Those are things that aren't going to come in an aid package. Those are things that are long-term investments. The only way that Africans can be able to do this themselves is if we have a serious restructuring of the way that we do business with Africa. That is that corporations that invest can't use these enormous tax write-offs or bribery to get to avoid reinvestment a portion of their profits in Africa. We have to revise the trade laws so that if 80% of the gross produce of the continent of Africa is agricultural, yet they not only can they not export it, but they have to accept IMF conditions would allow easy import from the Western countries and China into Africa at a prices which are make African produce uncompetitive. Well, you're entrenching poverty. If they can't earn, if Africans can't earn a living, how do you expect them to compete? And how do you expect them to take care of themselves? The system is designed to protect the wealthy and the powerful, and that has to change. So a small change in our trade policy, vis-a-vis tariffs, vis-a-vis subsidies, vis-a-vis fair trade, a small change could do an enormous amount towards moving Africa to self-sufficiency.
And are there any hints or indications that Obama is moving in that direction?
Well, Obama, during the campaign, he did make some suggestions that these things had to be looked at, and he even suggested some policies such as the transfer of new technologies vis-a-vis green technology to sort of wean Africa off of the need for oil and this kind of stuff, carbon credits, and there have been a number of suggestions, but the fact of the matter is the Africa policy has not gotten off the ground. I don't know whether it's because the president has been so absorbed in other major issues that are confronting the administration right now, but he's getting people in place. We need something better than slogans about rule of law, democracy, and all this other stuff. We need some concrete actions that are going to make a difference for Africa. And we've heard the rhetoric. We have not seen it yet. What we have seen is a major, major investment in war and terror and AFRICOM, which, on its face, will not contribute to a secure future for the continent.
Thanks for taking the time to talk with us today, Gerald.
Oh, it's such a pleasure, and thank you for having me.
I've been speaking with Gerald Lamel. He is the executive director of Africa Action, which is the oldest human rights organization that focuses on social and political justice for the people of Africa.